Now, will you turn in your Bibles, please, to James chapter 4. James 4, as we return to the study of this practical book of the New Testament. For those of you visiting with us, we have been going through this book of James, looking at its teachings and its call to us today. This present message from James 4, 13 to 17 has to do with planning without God, something perhaps that most of us might be guilty of, not necessarily in the same way as others. There's a group of people known as Christian atheists. Now, if there's ever an oxymoron, that is one. Christian atheists. Well, that's what they claim to be. Someone has put it this way, perhaps for you and I to understand a little bit differently. 100% of the people in the world are humanists, and 89% of them believe in God. Do you follow that? 100 are humanists, but 89% believe in God. In other words, there are people who behave and live in a way that does not suggest God at all. But if you talk with them, they tell you they believe in God. And if you get right down to the matter, you will find that they have never consulted God for anything in their lives. If something goes wrong, they'll say, "Why is God allowing this to happen?" But when everything is going well, they live as though God does not exist. Let me suggest to you, my friends, what James is saying to us. He begins with a very queer and antiquated phrase in the King James translation. He says, "Go to now." Go to now. It's a very antique, if you please, kind of expression. It is there for us to watch and wonder, what is this all about? Yet what James is saying, he's actually relating what he's about to say to a certain group of people in the church. These are people who had become successful in business. They had risen to the top. They made it to the place where they had a sense of security in what they had actually accomplished. And they would patronize God, if you please. They'd come to church, but the rest of the week, God had absolutely nothing to do with them as it related to their daily lives. And now they're sitting in church. They have given their offerings. They have done what they needed to do with the songs. And James now comes and he says, "I want to say something to you. I want to speak particularly to you who are successful, who have made it, who are the business tycoons. I have something to say to you." And he begins to express his thought under the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. Listen to how he puts it. My translation puts it this way for us. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such a place in such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. You do not know what life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. As we look into the text, James tells us that there is a sense of arrogance with self-sufficiency. He's dealing with a person who has it all together, as it were. This is a self-sufficient man or a self-sufficient woman. They have come through the ranks and they have gone to the school of hard knocks. And they have made it to the top and no one is going to get them away from there. James says there's a kind of arrogance about that. And then he delineates our text for us. He tells us, first of all, about the plans of the self-sufficient. The plans of the self-sufficient. Come now, you who say. The word "say" in the original, my friends, is someone who makes an affirmative statement. Someone who makes a statement of self-sufficiency belonging to that person. He looks within himself. He takes his little red book, or his little blue book, or his little black book, whatever color it might be, in which he has all the plans of tomorrow. And he says, this is what's going to take place in my life. I have it all outlined here. James says, I have something to say to you. You who determine what tomorrow will be, you who are behaving as though you do not realize that really tomorrow doesn't belong to you. You may have plans, and that is correct. James isn't saying we should never make plans, because one of the greatest plans in the scriptures, my friends, greatest plan, humanly speaking, was made by Joseph. When in Egypt there was a famine to take place, and Joseph went through the tremendous painstaking responsibility of making plans for when the 7 years of famine came, and that was the salvation of Egypt, if you please. James isn't saying we shouldn't plan. But James is saying that the only one who has the responsibility of planning absolutely is God. No human being has it within himself or herself to so plan his or her life so as to exclude God and to be assured that what that person has planned will be accomplished. There's a very wonderful story in the book of Daniel. When Nebuchadnezzar rose to the top, and he said, now this is what's going to happen. This is the kingdom I have built. This is all mine. He looked at it. He looked over his kingdom and he was really rejoicing over what his hand had accomplished. And I find something very moving in that. Because when Nebuchadnezzar was planning and celebrating his plans, the scripture says, that very moment, God tripped him up. Now, God was not out to take advantage of this man. I'm not suggesting for one moment that God is waiting for us to make plans so that when we make it, he just trips it, takes it away from us. None at all. But you and I were not made, my friends, to live to ourselves, by ourselves, and from ourselves. We were created to live to the glory of God and there experience the fullness of living and what that is. But here's someone who had reached the top and forgot God. You who say today, the present, as if he owns it. You who say tomorrow, the future, as if he knows it. Here is the pomposity of this man. Here is this kind of a self-sufficient person. Today we will do this. I will be following a story, real story with you through this message. It is the story of Sandy. Young, quick, brilliant Sandy. Sandy is being sought after by colleges in the United States. Fleet-footed. Able to run. They really wanted him. And Sandy was running one day, his mother sitting, watching her son. And all of a sudden, Sandy is coming close to the line. He's about to finish. Just before he got to the line, his legs started to shake in ways that wasn't there before. And he got just about to the finishing line and he fell. Here was Sandy planning his life. And Sandy thought he was going to be one of America's fastest runners. And he did everything to make sure that that was so. When he was running this race, he discovered something. That he was born with a bad heart. And that was going to plague him. James tells us that you and I cannot plan tomorrow with any certainty because it doesn't belong to us. Only God can plan tomorrow because known unto God are all his works from the beginning of creation, says Acts chapter 15 and verse 18. Known before God is yesterday, today, and forever, right now. but not before you and me. Not before you and me. And so we have the plans of the self-sufficient. They say with a sense of confidence and determination, today we will do this, tomorrow we'll do this. James says that not only do we have this plan, but we have what he calls, what I call the presumptuousness of the plan. He's presumptuous with it. Look, if you please, at what we find in our text. And the King James again says, and we will continue there. That word continue in the original means to be uninterrupted. Nobody will get in the way of my plans. We will continue there for a year. Here's how it's going to take place. And James says in verse 16, they begin to boast. They display a kind of proudful arrogance. Look at what these hands have accomplished. Now here is the plans for tomorrow. There's a kind of presumptuousness about it. We will stay there for a year. We will stay there for 6 months. We're going to do this with our lives. And you know what, my friends, I see this. As I was contemplating this thought, I thought of it. I thought of young people who's young and vibrant and full of life. And I remember sometimes talking to some of them and they say, I can't wait until I am 16 and I'm out of here. I say to you young people, who tells you you have 16 more to live? Who tells you you have one more year to live? You don't own your life. I don't own my life. Only God knows how long we have upon the face of this earth. And I cannot with certainty say what will happen the next moment as I speak with you at this very moment. The psalmist asks God, help me to know my end, my time, how frail I am, and how few my days are. The presumptuousness of this self-sufficiency. Tomorrow we'll do this. Oh, I can't wait for this to happen so I can do this. Sandy couldn't wait for the big event in his life. And long before he reached it, he was interfered with life. Life, my friends, is an interference to life. No one can say what's going to happen. Who can tell? Who can tell what will be tomorrow? A doctor's appointment to which we discover something we didn't really want to discover. There's a lump, if you please. There's a bad heart, if you please. I went to the doctor just a few days ago. Had my eyes checked. And I felt fine, so he said, I've discovered something with the eyes. I think you better come back. So I went back. And they put me through a great deal of activities. I wondered, I mean, does this guy know what? He puts me in a thing, strap my neck up, and all kinds of, now there are lights that are going to flash all over the place. And I thought, oh boy. So I got within this machine, sitting there in a room all by myself. And I'm just thinking all kinds of terrible things now. She said, lights are going to flash and you'll hear certain things. And I thought, oh, brother. So they turned the machine on. To make a long story short, the doctor said, I am concerned about detached retina. There is beginning to be a little bit of thinning out. And I'm going to observe it because if we continue, we might have to use lasers to try and arrest your vision. One morning, I'm in the shower, and I'm scrubbing down. I felt here, and here was a lump. Life. That's what it is, friends. You and I don't own tomorrow. No matter how strong and how healthy and how intelligent and how rich you are, tomorrow doesn't belong to you. It doesn't belong to me. And we cannot afford to be arrogant with it. We cannot afford to be. James is talking to people who are arrogant because they have made it and they believe I have come this far. I brought me this far, not remembering Nebuchadnezzar. Let me quickly go on to the absurdity of it. the absurdity of godless planning. James puts it this way for us in verse 14. You do not know what life will be like tomorrow. First of all, James says, there is human finiteness. You and I, my friends, are finite beings. We don't know. We only know what is because someone else has tried it and failed, or tried it and was successful, and we build upon what others have failed with or have been successful with. But we don't know. We don't know. We're finite. Literally, it means since you are such that cannot know. You and I were not made with the capacity, although made in the image of God, we were not made with the capacity to understand what's going to take place tomorrow. We weren't made with that capacity. Just think of the implications of that. If you and I had that situation. In the 12th chapter of the book of Acts, Herod felt proud, successful, powerful on the day he woke up that morning. And he said, what I'm going to do, I'm going to take two of Christ's disciples, Peter and James, and I'm going to arrest them. And after Easter, I am going to get rid of them. And he planned his day. And he planned tomorrow. As though tomorrow belonged to Herod, he didn't know what tomorrow would bring. We are all finite beings. I listened to Chuck Swindoll this morning while I was shaving. And he was talking about getting old. He said, there is something terrible about this commercial that says, you are not getting older, you are getting better. Chuck Swindoll said, yes and no, you are getting older, but you may not be getting better. That's true. Because we don't know. We are finite beings. Although made in the image of God, we do not possess attributes which are God's and God's alone. Omniscience, omnipresence, and so on. Human frailty. Not only human finiteness, but human frailty. For what is your life, says James? Now that thought, that question is not a philosophical question. He's asking, of what sort is your life? You are human beings. You are mortal beings. And my friends, in the 12th chapter of Luke's gospel, Jesus tells the story of a successful businessman. And that businessman said, soul, you have been so successful. You have reached the top. You have made it where no one else has. None of your peers can compare with you. This is what I am going to do. Let's eat and let's drink. Let's build bigger barns. Let's take a cruise. Let's do some of the things you've always wanted to do. Now again, my friends, I repeat, there's nothing wrong with planning, but there's everything wrong with planning without God. Everything wrong. And Jesus tells a story that that man planned for tomorrow, not realizing that he had only about 6 more hours to live. No more than 6 hours to live. If you can, turn to the book of Ecclesiastes. Very interesting verse. In Ecclesiastes 9 and 12. Ecclesiastes comes right after Proverbs. Proverbs comes right after the Psalms. Psalms come just before Job. And if you need anything beyond that, use your index. Ecclesiastes 9 and 12. This is a man who is looking back on life and understanding something about it. Listen to what he says. Moreover, man does not know his time. Like fish caught in treacherous net and a bird trapped in a snare, so the sons of men are ensnared at an evil time when it suddenly falls upon him. The key word there is suddenly. You know people, friends. You know people like that. Who suddenly something has come upon them and they are no more. Our neighbor, where we lived before we moved to our present place, was telling us of, I think it's her sister's husband or sister's friend's husband, came home from work one day, took his little girl and decided he was going to go and lay down for a few minutes with his little girl. Went up to the room, laid down, fell asleep. 6 o'clock, his wife called for supper. He did not answer. And there was his little girl beside him, with him fast asleep, literally dead. I can't explain that, friends. But James is telling us something extremely important. We can spend much of our time planning for time without dealing with our eternity. Without dealing with the sense that the next moment I can leave this life and I must stand before God. You do not know the time when suddenly it falls upon you. Sandy gets better. And the doctor tells him, you can run again. You can do it. I think everything is fine. We found the problem. So his father is on his mission. And one night the phone rang. Your son is in the hospital. He's had a terrible heart attack again. And so his whole plan is changed. Because his son is now with a very serious, serious problem in North Carolina. Human frailty. No matter how well we are. I was trying to think of that Boston Celtics basketball player. I think he's 6'7". I think Johnson is his name. Last year, after one of the games, collapsed. And within 3 months, he was gone. That's life. I don't like it, but that's life. Human frailty. None of us, my friends, while we might have eternity in our hearts put there by God, we were not created to spend eternity here. It belongs in another world. Planning without God. Ask yourself, my friends, your last plan, how much time in prayer did you spend seeking God for direction in planning? In fact, think of it, your very vacation. Do you know, my friends, it is possible, and I thank God that each of us went out from here this past summer and we returned with no incident at all whereof to speak. Do you think it was your own genius that did that? No, friends, God was gracious. God was gracious. I'll never forget the night we were on our way to some friends. It was a winter night, February night, making our way to their home. The snow was falling. As we made the curve, we saw this car coming right toward us. Right toward us. My wife screamed. She said, I thought we were gone for sure. We had a head-on. Fortunately, I was able to make some maneuvers. The car was hit on the driver's side and not straight ahead because he was coming right for us. I'm going to tell you, my friends, it is that in those moments, you know how frail your life is. That's when you begin to think, this is it. All I have lived been 30 years. So teach us to number our days, says the psalmist, that we may apply our hearts to wisdom. What does that mean? So teach us to live with a sense of our frailty. Living with a sense of how short our time really is. Tomorrow can be one of several things for many of us, friends. And I can only tell you, plan it with God, because you don't know what tomorrow will bring. Those human finiteness, we cannot know. Human frailty. Look around, you'll see what life is all about. And then there is human fate. What is your life? It is like a smoke. Here today, gone tomorrow. In fact, not even tomorrow. As soon as the sun comes, the mist is gone. That's how short life is. And you see this man in chapter 12 of Luke? He was planning and he's saying, this is what I'm going to do. And Jesus said, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. He was planning for tomorrow, never realizing that he had spent his last night upon the face of this earth. That day was all he had. All he had. Proverbs 27 and 1. Boast not thyself for tomorrow, for thou knowest not what a day will bring forth. Job 7:7 says, life is like the wind. Job 7:9 says, life is like the cloud. Psalm 102:11 says, life is like a shadow. Psalm 103:15, life is like the grass. In other words, my friends, life is brief. Life is brief. Life is brief. And then James takes us to the alternative to godless planning. The alternative to godless planning. Verse 15. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills. Now, I'm reading a book right now. It's been hard for me to get through it because some of the things I'm reading in this book are so far out, I cannot imagine that preachers would say dumb and stupid things like that. That's about the only way I can put it. Dumb and stupid. One of the writers in this book I'm reading says, we should never say if the Lord wills because that's a sign of unbelief. Friends, Jesus said it. Jesus said it. Paul lived his life, if the Lord wills, if the Lord wills. That is, if God permits. There is a deep conviction about divine control, my friends, when we look at the alternative to godless planning. We say, if the Lord wills. Before Christ came upon the face of the earth in his incarnate state, there was an expression that was made by many of the people of that day, and they used to use the words, if the gods will. If the gods will. From that, the Latin developed what we call, you've seen it in letters, DV, Deo Volente. It means God's willing. God's willing. And I make no apology, friends, if I'm going to the store and I am speaking to someone, I'll be back, Lord's willing, in 15 minutes. I'll be back, Lord's willing, in an hour's time. Because I do not know who's out there carelessly driving, whatever the case might be. I jokingly say to people, when I go to the bank, I always look around. I really do. Please forgive me. I look around and see, now, what's the nearest exit in the event of a robbery? I want to know which way I should go. I do. I'm sorry. I do it. I go to stores. I look for exits. I mean, I don't know who's there. I don't know what they're out for. If you think that's humorous, think of that trial going on in Britain right now with that mother who had her little baby with her and was taken by two 11-year-old boys. You don't know, friends. I don't know. So, Deo Volente, God's willing. I want to do this with my life. I want to become a singer. I want to become a bookkeeper. I want to become a husband. I want to become a wife. I want to have children. God's willing. Because that's the only alternative to godless planning. It may be that God is not willing. And in this conviction of God's control, I say, God, you have the right to intervene and to interrupt my plans because my life belongs to you. It belongs to you. I own what I own with my hands open. You gave and you can take away as you see fit. Life belongs to you. Planning belongs to you. And because my life belongs to you, my plans are laid before you. Oh, friends, it is said again and again in Scripture, the passion of godly living is to recognize God's control. And then there's a commitment to it. the commitment to it, not only the conviction to divine control, but the commitment. For he who knows to do good, that which is acceptable to God, and doeth it not, not planning with him, to him it is sin, lawlessness. I've always taken this verse to mean something that it doesn't mean. It is saying, if I know that I ought to put God in all my plans, not put him, by the way, acknowledge him in all my ways. If I know that I'm supposed to be doing that and I don't do it, that's sin. Because the sin of omission is as disastrous as the sin of commission. To fail to do something I know I ought to do, not do it is sin. Failing to do something I know I ought to do when God commands it, that is sin. It was Sandy's last operation. And Lathan Ford says of his son, as I looked at him, I asked the doctors, be good to my boy, be good to my boy. And his mother, Jeannie, who is Billy Graham's sister, and Lathan Ford, Billy Graham's brother-in-law, watched as at the age of 21, God called Sandy out of his life. He was to run no more race. But as you read the story of a father honoring his son in the book Sandy, you get the feeling that Sandy knew that life on this earth was short and that he was determined that whatever time he had left upon this earth, he was going to give that time to God. And Lathan Ford, in telling this story, says, as I watched and as I read later on in my son's diary, there was the deep conviction that God was in control of his life. And although he was only given 21 years here, I didn't realize the impact of his life on others until after God had called him out of this life. Dear friends, young people, may I address you for a minute? You cannot plan tomorrow because tomorrow belongs to God. Older people, if you are planning tomorrow without God, realize that God has the right and the power to interrupt your plans. And to all of us, I say, let's begin to live our lives with an unashamed DV. Lord's willing, we will. Lord's permit, we will. But nothing outside of what God permits. Sandy's dead. But although just 21 years, my friends, I can tell you his story because his life continues to speak to others. In that short amount of time, he gave it to God. And though he is dead, he continues to speak. Don't plan without God. Live with a conviction that he has the right to control, and live with a commitment that he wants to control.